Our next case is 15-1003, Cincinnati Bar Association versus Robert Hansford Hoskins. Mr. Hoskins?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. Madam Chief Justice and opposing counsel, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. In reviewing the court's website synopsis of this matter in the last few days, one of the things that it stated simply was that I was denying all wrongdoing in this matter. That has not been the case in my objection, nor has it ever been the case. As to this matter before the bar. To the contrary, I have regularly admitted to wrongdoings in each of the different claims that have made against me by the Cincinnati Bar. I have made mistakes in not timely contacting clients. I have taken bankruptcy cases that were far beyond my expertise. I have not transmitted issues to clients in writing that I should have done so to reflect oral agreements that we've had. However, as we said in the prior case, adults have difficulty sometimes in admitting things that they don't think that they are culpable for. And I think that that's what the basis of my objection here is, not that I have been absent of wrongdoing, it's rather trying to clarify exactly the wrongdoing to which I have been.
Well, counsel, let me use your time effectively this morning. Sounds like you're saying there's been some errors made and you're remorseful about that.
Yes, sir.
But I'm looking at a finding that throughout these proceedings, you failed to fully cooperate in discovery, that your IOLTA records were requested but were never produced. Is that true?
Your Honor, my IOLTA records were requested. I indicated that I was practicing in the law office of someone else at the time and that I did not have access to those IOLTA records. I subpoenaed them and did not receive those IOLTA records. The Cincinnati Bar Association subpoenaed my phone records and all my other records and got the information that they needed, which is fine. The one piece of information I told them, my name is not on that IOLTA account. I don't have those records. We're gonna have to go to Judge Bupp and try to get those records. That's the only subpoena they didn't send out, Your Honor. But that's as to the IOLTA issue. There were other mistakes that I made. I did timely give the emails requested when the time frame was corrected to, or I was advised that I had produced for the wrong year the set of phone records that were requested. I timely supplemented.
With respect to the IOLTA account, you said that wasn't your IOLTA account, is that right?
It was not held in my name. I was working in the law office of Danny Bupp in Adams County during that time.
And so you did not, did you use that fund? Did you use someone else's? You weren't partners or anything else with Mr. Bowen?
That's the IOLTA account I used. At the time the request was made, Mr. Bupp had left the practice of law, having been elected the judge. I went to the office manager trying to get those. I sent them a subpoena trying to get those records for that time frame and was not able to get them.
But you were using somebody else's IOLTA account. It wasn't your own.
I was using the IOLTA account for the firm in which I was affiliated.
Were you a partner in that firm?
I was not a partner in that firm. I was...
Office sharing?
Office sharing.
So that doesn't entitle you to use somebody else's IOLTA account. Does it?
I believe that it does. If it does not, then I take responsibility for not.
Well, you should surely know the answer to that question.
I believe that I was. When the local judge told me, you'll use my IOLTA account, I accepted that. And if I did so wrongly, I take full responsibility for that mistake.
And did you ask Attorney Bupp, now Judge Bupp, I'd like to have the IOLTA records?
I gave them a subpoena. I gave one to the office manager, one to him, and I did not get a timely response.
Did you get any response?
I got a response from the office manager indicating that she couldn't locate those records, the office having been closed, was the response I got from her. But that was an oral response, and it was not
right. Did Mr. Bupp have, I'm trying to remember, did he have issues with disciplinary counsel as well?
Over this?
I believe.
Oh, over something else. I'm wondering if there was a reluctance because there was something else
there
percolating
was,
at the time.
There was an issue raised in terms of his handling of a matter. I believe that that matter was shelved pending the civil lawsuit regarding that same matter. I don't know if that was a factor or not.
So, okay. So there could have been something else stirring.
Yes, sir.
With Mr. Bupp and disciplinary counsel.
Yes, sir.
That's what I thought. All right.
Counsel, the panel and the board both recommended indefinite suspension, and you've said you objected and said no, it should be if anything, a stayed suspension. Our standard is what's going to protect the public. So tell us why you think a stayed suspension would protect the public.
Your Honor, I believe that the mistakes I made are fixable. I have made mistakes in not having an adequate staff or an adequately trained staff, or in some cases by not having a staff at all. That's something that I can certainly correct either individually or more likely by affiliating with more of an experienced law firm who can handle these matters for me. I've made mistakes in terms of not implementing. Just in the last few months, I started using a program called Clio, which did my time entry and docketing entry, and was much better of a firm management is a help that I could make as well. Your Honor, I've been working with the Ohio Lawyers Assistance Program in terms of problems I've been fighting with depression through medication and therapy and treatment. I believe that I can improve there as well, Your Honor.
Are you on a specific plan?
I am, Your Honor.
But this was a contract, I guess is what I'm asking.
It was a contract. I just received a letter reflecting that contract from Chris Carson at OLAP yesterday, indicating that I suffered from a major depressive disorder with moderate recurrent episode, and I'm working with OLAP and my therapist in terms of proper medication and therapy to address those depression issues as well.
And you'd be willing as a condition of any stay or suspension as a condition that you'd be willing to stay, abide by that contract?
Of course.
In other instances, we've also asked someone to serve as a mentor, as a monitor. Would you be willing to work with someone in that capacity?
Of course, Your Honor. Yes, very much so. Your Honors, just one point of clarification. I'm here today to take responsibility for my actions or inactions. And there's a long list of mistakes that I have made. The issues I have, for example, one of the rulings of the Board of Commissioners was that I failed to tell my bankruptcy client that he needed to take credit counseling before the bankruptcy was filed. According to page 21 of his transcript of his testimony, the question on line 10, did you receive instruction from Mr. Hoskins as to what you had to do to complete in terms of counseling prior to the filing the bankruptcy? Yes. What did he advise you? He advised me as to the websites I needed to go to and the certificates I needed to complete. Also at Respondents Exhibit A3, I'm telling my client, this is what you have to do before you file, including the bankruptcy certificate. That's the issue I have. There are several places where the Board of Commissioners rulings is directly contrary to all of the evidence presented. I made mistakes in allowing a client to talk me into filing a Chapter 11 that I had no business filing. I made another mistake with that client when he came to me having dismissed the 11 because he had not taken the credit counseling class that he swore under oath that he had taken, or at least we couldn't prove that he was, to refile a 13 to enact the stay. It was a mistake to again file the 13 without being able to fully confirm that he was under the debt threshold. But again, the record is clear that I several times told him, here are what you have to do. before our 341 meeting with the trustee. You have to have your taxes complete. You have to have all the mortgages together. His testimony on page 88 and 89 is clear of the many times I told him that he needed to make payments to the trustee, and him testifying that I had given him the address to where to make the payments to the trustee and when. His 13 was dismissed because he failed to produce the tax returns that were required and he failed to make the necessary payments. Your Honor, the record is clear that I advised him to do those things many times. But one of the things I've learned as to best practices is the bankruptcy laws are such that you can file without having that underlying documentation. I don't have to have the credit certificate, the counseling certificate before I file. I don't have to have the mortgages and the tax returns before I file. And that was something attested to by the bar's expert on that matter. However, I've learned the hard way that should I ever file a bankruptcy case again, obviously my practice would be that I need all of that information together, because as shown by this case, I can't count on the client to necessarily bring those matters to me timely before the filing. I need them up front so I can properly evaluate his case before
doing
so.
You also have had problems with domestic relations cases and a tort claim, correct, with clients?
Yes, Your Honor. As to the domestic relations case, I had represented a woman as to a dissolution in Butler County, Ohio. Once that dissolution was over or through that process, I was sued by a former pro bono client over a quadro that I had done. I had orally told this client, look, you should go to pension evaluators. They do it better and cheaper than I did. I did not put that in writing, which I should have done. Moreover, I represented her in something else after the divorce. I represented her on a protective order she filed against her ex-husband for $50. But after that was done, I did not withdraw as legal counsel for her from her lawsuit, and I clearly should have done so.
What about the fee splitting?
Your Honor, it is what it is, and I take full responsibility for that. According to the Social Security Act, all you have to do to be an appointed representative is to be a knowledgeable representative. You don't have to be an attorney. You don't have to have a certificate. You just have to be knowledgeable and willing to help, and you give your certificate to Social Security and your fee request, and they grant you a fee whether or not you have a fee. There is no requirement under Social Security that any attorney has to be involved. Not everything an attorney does is necessarily legal work. I don't know that fee splitting with a non-attorney is violative of the Social Security Act. I had presumed that since...
Well, fee splitting with a non-attorney is violative of the Code of Professional Conduct as well, not just the Social Security.
And Your Honor, if that's the holding of the court, I take full responsibility as to my mistake.
You would dispute or you don't agree that fee splitting is a problem for an attorney and a non-attorney?
Your Honor, I did not believe so in this instance at the time that I was undertaking these representations.
Did you investigate it? Did you ask for an opinion on that?
I didn't ask for an opinion from the court. I spoke to my clients. I researched the law myself, and if I did so incorrectly, I take full responsibility for that. My work with this organization has solely been with other attorneys.
What's the status of restitution to all these clients?
There are no clients that are owed any money.
Everything's paid in full.
Everything's paid in full, Your Honor.
What kind of work did you do at Dinsmore?
I was a litigation partner.
I don't know what that means, though. What did you do?
Represented large corporations in product liability cases and pharmaceutical defense cases, and I also did domestic relations work.
So, okay, the domestic relations part would carry over to your sole practice here, but other than that, you didn't do bankruptcy work at Dinsmore?
No, sir.
So that's a new field that you're...
Yes, sir.
You decided to tackle on your own?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Counsel, I guess we're going to hear from the other side fairly soon. And I'd like to direct your attention to subparagraph E of the board's findings. They're finding the submission of false statements or other deceptive practices during the disciplinary process, inaccurate testimony regarding his IOLTA account deposits. What's that all about?
Your Honor, it's the same issue that we've addressed before.
Inaccurate testimony regarding the IOLTA account. What does that mean?
Your Honor, I testify that I had put certain funds in the IOLTA account. I have not been able to produce records supporting that testimony. That's the only issue that I can be aware of, Your Honor.
Okay.
Your Honor, as to the other domestic relations case I took a Kentucky dissolution matter. I received the client's written responsive questionnaire on July 30th. I turned around and gave him draft petitions and separation agreements and draft Kentucky pleadings that same day. 10 days later, I sent him an email after getting revisions to those saying, look, we need to update the separation agreement to show more information as to the financials, and we need to update the parenting plan. Here's a copy of the Campbell County, Kentucky parenting plan. Let's get together tomorrow and finalize these documents. I then went to his office. I was 15 minutes late to his meeting, and he refused to come downstairs and do anything. The only person who produced evidence about those Kentucky pleadings who had any expertise in Kentucky dissolutions was me. The evidence is, we just need to make these changes, and you need to sign them, and we're ready to file. That was the only evidence introduced in terms of the Kentucky pleadings. I don't know how the Board of Commissioners could have suggested that there was no evidence that any work had been done to his benefit.
Counsel, you've used your time.
Great. Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Welch.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, I'm Rosemary Welch on behalf of the Cincinnati Bar Association. We are before the court in an unusual procedural posture this morning, both to address respondents' objections to the findings of the board that he be indefinitely suspended, and this court's order finding respondent in contempt and ordering him to appear in person. In light of the finding of contempt, respondent's flagrant disregard for this court's orders, the Bar Association now recommends not an indefinite suspension, but a permanent disbarment. The initial complaint was filed against respondent in February of 2014.
Is Mr. Hoskins aware that that was going to be your recommendation today?
He was aware of it to the extent that we submitted a list of supplemental authorities with two cases targeted towards a disbarment for findings of contempt.
But you didn't tell him you're coming here today and going to tell us that he should be disbarred instead of getting indefinite.
The court always has discretion to impose the penalty that they see fit for the, and that's true.
How much courtesy is afforded opposing counsel? None, apparently.
I will confess that our courtesy was submission of the case authorities.
Right.
And for the time this case was filed in February of 2014, it has simply been delayed and gotten worse. The initial filing in 2014 was investigated and brought to hearing in front of the panel, 2 days of hearings. Before the panel issued its decision, yet another complaint was filed, and the panel delayed making its decision. We had a third day of hearing on the second complaint. The two were consolidated. Before the panel made its decision, the order was submitted from the Kentucky court suspending respondent from the practice of law.
When was that exactly?
The order from Kentucky was in March.
March of
2015.
Of
2015. This court issued its suspension, a reciprocal suspension order, in April of 2015. The board issued its decision in June of 2015. The board granted the Bar Association the right to supplement the record to be considered by the board with the information regarding the Kentucky violation. And as you can see in the board's decision, they considered that as an aggravating factor.
Counsel, as Justice French indicated earlier, and I'm certainly in agreement, the purpose of discipline is to protect the public. And I'm hearing a lot of testimony here this morning, not testimony, but opinions. Can you tell me about paragraph E? Those are very, very, very critical findings by the board.
Paragraph E relating to lack of forthrightness.
Inaccurate testimony regarding his IOLTA account deposits. Well, I guess that's very important to me. If somebody is providing under oath inaccurate testimony about where other people's money is, that's a problem. What can you tell me about that?
I will tell you about the IOLTA account. First of all, the records from the investigation that I understand have been submitted to the court include Mr. Hoskins' deposition. And if you review that sworn testimony under oath, he was asked where he had his IOLTA account. And he identified several different banks where he had an IOLTA account in that testimony, and the Bar Association, as part of its investigation, attempted to find those. There's nothing in the record from any of those banks because we got no information back. When we filed a stipulation of facts prior to the hearings in front of the panel, included in the stipulation is a stipulation by Mr. Hoskins that he failed to deposit the Gaimes' check into an IOLTA account. And yet, if you read his objections to the panel's finding of fact, he objected to that finding of fact, even though he'd already stipulated to the truth of that. And in terms of who's responsible for the IOLTA records, that was the responsibility of Mr. Hoskins. He was ordered by the panel to produce those records. If he claimed that he served a subpoena and got no response, Mr. Fitzgerald and the panel members were ready to stand behind that and enforce that subpoena, but were never given the opportunity.
So you've never saw proof of a subpoena from Mr. Hoskins to Mr. Bupp?
We were shown a copy of what purported to be a subpoena. I have no evidence that was ever served. I have not seen evidence that subpoena was served.
And he never asked for sanctions to be visited upon the someone who did not respond to the subpoena?
There is nothing in the record that is the case. I personally am not aware of anything.
Thank you.
In the deposition, when you mentioned that he identified certain banks, did he also, at that point, identify the attorney that he says whose account he was using?
Justice Leinziger, I will confess I do not remember that precise detail of the conversation. That deposition was over a year ago.
But we have that deposition.
You have that deposition. It was filed.
I want to make sure I'm clear as we leave that subject. Are we talking about someone who is a sitting judge in Ohio today?
At the time that Mr. Hoskins was affiliated with the Bupp Law Office, he was sharing office space. He was an attorney. Subsequent to that time, Mr. Bupp has become a sitting judge.
No, I understand that, but you're saying he is a sitting judge today.
I understand that,
That's
yes.
Why we're having the discussion with an office manager and not the former. Were they co-counsel?
My understanding from Mr. Hoskins' testimony is that they were not co-counsel, that Mr. Hoskins shared office space, as he said to you, and the receptionist would relay phone calls and
so on. I don't want to be indelicate here, but isn't that a violation if an attorney permits someone who is not co-counsel to use their IOLTA account? That's a violation, is it not?
If you're asking for my personal opinion, I would say yes.
Mr. Hoskins was suspended by Kentucky when?
March of 2015.
And then we imposed?
I'm sorry?
Then we imposed a reciprocal?
Yes, a reciprocal suspension in April of 2015.
So he's not been practicing since then?
That's not quite the case. The evidence submitted in support of the motion for contempt indicates, he has appeared in court, taken depositions, and participated in conferences with the court. and communicated with clients without revealing that he is not licensed to practice law in Ohio.
And how late? I mean, one has to, when you're a sole practitioner, you got to do something to even to comply with the clients, or that matters just get worse yet. So when was the last that you have information regarding him practicing?
The last information, I participated in the investigation with respect to the motion to contempt. It would have been, to my knowledge, the summer of this year, of 2015.
So a month or two after he's suspended?
Well, more than a month. The suspension was in April.
All right.
And these activities continued for a number of months after that period of time.
Did he not represent to someone that he had been reinstated?
The deposition testimony in the Fletcher case, a copy of that deposition is attached to the motion for finding of contempt. Mr. Hoskins represents that he had been readmitted, that he was no longer suspended in Ohio.
And that was not true. In fact, if I recall, during the proceeding, whatever it was, they checked.
That's correct.
With the Supreme Court and verified that he was still suspended, and he had made representations minutes before that he was no longer suspended.
That's correct. And that is an example, I think, Justice O'Neill, of the kind of lack of forthrightness, not being above board in testimony, that the panel that heard this case felt about his testimony from the beginning until the end. And that's a fine example. Another example would be in his response to the Bar Association for when the initial complaint came out about Ms. Long. He represented, I gave back her file, I sent back the photographs to her attorney. When he answered the formal complaint, he made the same representation, and yet later admitted that he didn't timely return them, and in fact, the testimony at the hearing was that they were not produced until he brought them to the deposition because there was a request for production along with the notice of deposition. It was a notice of deposition.
Did he also identify himself as Thomas Mays in court proceedings?
He did. The evidence in the affidavit, and that was an affidavit I participated in gathering, is that Mr. Mays was a former associate in the BUP law office. He was no longer practicing in the state of Ohio because he'd taken an academic position in another state, and Mr. Hoskins created an email address. He used that email address and made a phone call from his office phone with the number registered to the state of Ohio, identifying himself as Mr. Mays.
And this went on into the summer after his suspension.
It did.
So he misrepresented at a court proceeding in front of a judge that he was admitted to practice when he was not. He created this phony persona based on a true identity of a former associate and tried to continue to participate in a case into the summer after his suspension, the summer of 15, orchestrating this fraud.
It's a fair summary of the evidence.
Are there any clients owed restitution?
At the hearing of this matter, Mr. Hoskins left the hearing over the lunch break and came back and presented a check to Scott Gaines, who was a witness. That was in full refund of the fee, and in fact, that was a little bit too much. That was the only one who had a monetary request for restitution. Gretchen Puff Amer was needing her quadro. As far as I know, she's never gotten her quadro. The court order in the domestic relations case said that counsel for Ms. Amer will draft and present the quadro to the court within 45 days. That didn't happen. He didn't and he did not withdraw from the case. So she is not made whole, but it's not monetary restitution. Money was not at issue in the other cases of which we are aware.
Counsel, how long was the Kentucky suspension?
The Kentucky suspension was for 60 days. This court's order of suspension after that required conditions and provided specifically that Mr. Hoskins would not be reinstated in for the practice of law in Ohio pending further order of this court, which has not been issued.
So by about May, he was reinstated in Kentucky.
That's
kept practicing in Ohio, even though he hadn't let Ohio know that he was the basis of the reciprocal suspension had been lifted, correct?
That's my understanding, yes. If there are, summarizing the evidence here, I think it's important to point out that these are not just clients who came to the Cincinnati Bar to complain about this lawyer, but four separate sitting judges. First of all, Judge Burton Perlman for the U.S. District Bankruptcy Court. Judge Perlman imposed a $500 sanction after respondent failed to attend a show cause hearing, and his neglect resulted in the client himself handwriting a motion to save his property from foreclosure. And that was after respondent had attempted to withdraw a motion that would have attempted to save that foreclosure.
Counsel, there are mental health issues here, and that usually goes on the side of the scales that helps lawyers perhaps avoid the most severe penalties that would be coming for their conduct if someone is attributable to mental health issues. Do you have any reason to doubt the accuracy of that part of it?
Justice Pfeiffer, I will say in terms of notice to counsel, we have been working on this case. I personally have been working on this case since the summer of 2013 and have deposed Mr. Hoskins and asked those specific questions and was assured by Mr. Hoskins during the deposition that he suffered from a mild depression, that he was taking a generic treatment for depression, that he did not feel that he that had any bearing on his practice of law whatsoever, that the medication assisted him and that he was carrying on as usual, that he had no drug problems, he had no alcohol problems.
He says he has a contract with OLAP now. Do you know anything about that?
As I understood his testimony this morning, that contract was entered into yesterday.
Oh.
And I have no basis to have any opinion whatsoever about that. But I will say it was something that, on behalf of the Bar Association, we certainly were alert to the possibility that a referral to OLAP would be appropriate and helpful for protection of the public. And we saw no evidence and no basis to do that up until this morning.
Ms. Wells, did you indicate that there were four judges who made complaints against the respondent here, Mr. Hoskins?
Whose testimony or whose input was involved, Justice Perlman, and also Judge, and may I note about who was made whole, Judge Perlman imposed a $500 sanction for a respondent's conduct in representing Mr. Krause in that bankruptcy. And at the time of the first hearing in front of the panel, nearly a year later, that sanction had not been paid. I believe it has been paid now. The other judge was Judge Brett Spencer from the Adams County Court of Common Pleas. Judge Spencer urged respondent to report his misconduct to disciplinary counsel. Judge Spencer was so concerned about the misrepresentation about why he was not in the court, where he was going to be, and who was going to be representing his client, and with what preparation, he says, self-report this, which he did, and disciplinary counsel referred that matter back to us, and that's why it's here. The other two judges were involved and are mentioned in the pleadings related to contempt. Judge Richard Frank from the Claremont County Court of Common Pleas. He wrote a letter to disciplinary counsel advising of respondents continuing to practice law after suspension. And similarly, Magistrate David Stockdale, who presided over the adoption matter and also communicated with disciplinary counsel with respect to respondent's counsel, his appearance in that matter after suspension.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Hodgkins, let me ask you about your involvement with OLAP. When did that start?
I signed the contract on October 8th, 2015, and it was the letter that she sent to me about that contract, which was received yesterday.
Wait a second. You went to them in October and signed a contract?
Yes.
For what purposes? What's the contract say?
The contract is for 2 years I will contact them. There's 10 or 12 different things that I'll do. I will contact them every day with a status of how I'm doing. I will, there was one of the depression medications that I wasn't taking because of the cost, that I would take all of my depression medication, that I would seek therapy, that I would go to a gym, that I, there are 10 or 12 different things that I would do.
Okay, so that's part of an OLAP, and you started that in October of 15.
Yes.
And what did you get yesterday?
A letter from her, just.
Who's her?
From Christine Carlson of OLAP, just confirming what we had just discussed.
So confirming that you have a contract with them?
Yes.
Do you have a report from a psychologist or a psychiatrist, someone that says that this wrongdoing that you, the way you handled yourself, is a result of a severe mental illness?
Your Honor, I do not and won't meet with a with the therapist until sometime next week.
Okay.
Mr. Hoskins, you said you signed the contract October 8th?
Yes.
The conditions and so on. Have you been complying with those conditions from then till November 30th?
I have, which is one of the things that's confirmed in this letter.
The letter confirms that you have been in compliance?
Yes.
Counsel, why would you make a court appearance on July 6th, knowing that your license was suspended in Ohio?
Your Honor, Gerald Halcher was my best friend growing up. I had previously done an adoption for his younger brother pro bono. He had contacted me a year ago about doing an adoption, and I sent him the court's online packet of here's what you have to do for an online or for an adult adoption. They filled out the forms. I filed them for him because you have to go to the case manager before you file them. I was never the attorney of record. I never received a dime for this case. I was just helping my friend represent himself when I...
But you did appear. You did appear before the magistrate.
Judge,
You did say counsel of record.
Absolutely. Judge, I was in the room. The judge recognized me from other hearings and said, Mr. Hoskins, can you examine these witnesses? And I did so, and it was a mistake. It was, I should have said,
right,
Judge...
Counsel, what about your ultra persona, Thomas Mays? Why don't you tell the court about that?
Judge, we had a scheduling hearing in that case soon after my suspension. I participated in that scheduling conference by saying Thomas Mays, who I had worked with in Ohio, who had left the state and then was returning to Ohio, would be taking over that case.
Had a conversation with him to come to that agreement?
I had had conversations with him that he was coming back to Ohio, and I had some cases that I was going to ask him to take over, which he acknowledged.
He acknowledged what?
That he would take cases that he would take any business that I had.
And did he tell that to disciplinary counsel?
No, I had not discussed the specifics of these or any of the other cases with him because he was not yet in Ohio.
Okay, but wait a second. Did he tell the disciplinary counsel, yes, we had an agreement, I was going to come back to Ohio and I was going to take over Mr. Hodgkins' cases?
No, I had not discussed
this. He didn't have an agreement with you to do that?
No, we did not have an agreement.
Okay, so then you decided that you were going to impersonate him.
No, Your Honor, I participated in the call and said I anticipate that my partner Thomas Mays is going to take over this case.
Which he's not your partner.
He was previous to this time. I anticipated he would be when he returned. And
a partner or someone you shared office space with?
Someone I shared office space with,
associate. You can't represent him as your partner.
Your Honor, I don't recall if I said partner or associate. I don't recall.
Okay, so you're saying initially, you say within days of your suspension, you inform everybody that Mr. Mays is going to be the new attorney on a telephone conversation, and that was April 29th. It's actually, according to the affidavit, it says that the clerk conducted a telephone status conference. Someone who identified himself as Thomas Mays participated in the conference, stating he was the new counsel for Burkey.
No, Your Honor, they called my number. They called the number that I have listed on that.
So you didn't identify yourself as Thomas Mays on the 29th of April?
No, Your Honor.
This affidavit is false.
It is incorrect in that regard. The clerk called me because my name was on the pleading.
Then on April 29th, following the status, until June of 2015, this affiant received email messages from thomasmays@yahoo.com regarding discovery in this case and sent replies to that email address. You created thomasmays@yahoo.com.
Yes, Your Honor, I did.
Without Mr. Mays' permission?
Yes, Your Honor, I did.
Okay. You were impersonating Mr. Mays?
Yes, Your Honor, I was.
Okay. So you continued doing that and then got a little confused and at one point must have used your own Gmail account and therein were caught.
Your Honor, I anticipated that Mr. Mays was returning to Ohio and would take this case, and I take full responsibility for doing so.
Okay, well, that doesn't give you the right to create a Mr. Mays account and represent yourself as Mr. Mays.
It does not.
Counsel, at any time, going back in this office sharing arrangement, I take it that would be the best way to describe the financial picture of what was going on with Bupp and with Mays. But was there letterhead that made it appear to the public that there was a firm involved?
My name was on the letterhead.
What did the letterhead give us some guidance? What did the letterhead say?
Law Office of Danny Bupp, and it had Bupp's name and different attorneys in the office on the letterhead. Additionally, my pleadings had the line under my signature, Robert Hoskins, Law Office of Danny R. Bupp.
So Bupp sort of held you all out to the public as partners or associates or something?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I don't have any more questions.
As to the IOLTA issue, I had long indicated that I would have difficulty getting the IOLTA since it wasn't under my name. I give the bar the subpoena that I had served on Mary Jane Campbell. They never followed it up. I did not seek sanctions against the sitting judge relative to my request for IOLTA account from his former office.
Would you explain that a little? You served the subpoena, and they said, can't find it, go away. And you didn't do anything further?
No, Judge, I didn't.
You didn't do anything further?
I didn't.
You didn't what?
I did not do anything further.
But you did serve a legitimate subpoena. You're saying that. Did
yes.
you?
Yes. Yes, on Mary Jane Campbell, who was his office administrator, and let him know that I was looking for that data, and he directed me to her. Your Honor, relative to the deposition at issue, the suspension letter I got from the state of Kentucky, which was suspending me in part for the same Kentucky divorce matter that has been addressed by the Ohio court, the order says you won't be reinstated until you're reinstated in Kentucky. For that deposition, I had wrongly presumed that when I was reinstated in Kentucky, that my suspension in Ohio ended. When we sat down, the opposing counsel came to my office. We talked to her 30, 40 minutes before the deposition. When the deposition started, he said, I think you're suspended in Ohio. I said, I didn't think so.
Well, you said a little more than that. He said, I talked to disciplinary counsel yesterday, and they said you were suspended. And you said, well, I talked to them, and they said I was okay. I mean, we have the deposition transcript.
I have spoken with them yesterday, and I had been, but I don't have anything from them. And then you say to Mr. Hale, I didn't bring anything with, or, you know, anything. Okay, I just want to clarify. So if you, your representation is that you've been reinstated, we'll take it on value. So you represented that you had clarified it with the Ohio Supreme Court, and you weren't suspended any longer.
Judge, I had clarified it with the Kentucky Supreme Court that I was no longer suspended, and I was under the mistaken belief that that suspension, the end of the Kentucky suspension, would end the reciprocal Ohio suspension.
I want to come back to the subpoena you issued. You said you talked to BUP?
Yes, sir.
About the IOLTA records?
Yes, sir.
And he said, who has them?
His former office manager was still in the building that his law firm had been in.
Okay, and what's going on in that building now?
There are other attorneys practicing.
And what does their letterhead say?
I don't know. I presume it doesn't say BOP because he's no longer practicing.
Yeah, I but hope it doesn't, but I'm wondering.
There are other attorneys practicing in that office.
So is this grand IOLTA account now servicing other folks? Do people who rent space in the building, is this just one grand IOLTA?
I don't currently know what they're doing, Your Honor.
And that's the way it was when you were there.
That's the way it was when I was there.
One IOLTA account for everybody in the building that's practicing law.
Yes. And I have since that time created my own IOLTA account at U.S. Bank.
Okay.
Your Honor, I don't believe none of my clients have lost money. I have been practicing for 18 years. I didn't wake up one day and decide to start being a screw-up. I have identified and discussed my history of depression at every single hearing and deposition and testimony that we've had in this matter over the last few years. I just didn't wake up one day and decided I'm going to be a screw-up. But I think that all of these problems are fixable, and I ask the court for the opportunity to do so. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we'll take the matter under advisement. Both the Bar Association versus Hoskins in 15-1003 and the Disciplinary Council versus Hoskins in 15-481 on the order to appear and make a decision on both matters. Marshall, will you?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.